At the end of Voltaire's magnum opus, Candide, he has Candide, the main character, say, "We must cultivate our garden." His response is in counter to his tutor Pangloss saying, "This is the best of all possible worlds," and that basically everything happens for a reason and for good, and we just have to deal with it. As Candide goes about his travels, he realizes that in the end, we must just cultivate our gardens. Much research and debate and other musings have been done about what Voltaire meant. Now, people suggest Voltaire even meant to have a call to environmentalism, but anyway, this is not about what other people think or my response to them. It's about my musings on we must cultivate our garden. So, in this, I welcome you to the third installment. You can find me on TikTok, in the middle of nowhere 0102, and my website by the same name, and YouTube by the same name. But let's begin my musings. Dr. Griffin at Chadron State College, another middle of nowhere place, was the first to kind of introduce me to real philosophy and in Philosophy 101. Now, we studied Plato and Socrates and the difference between Russell and C.S. Lewis, and we read 1984, Orwell, of course. And one of my favorites, though, was Voltaire and Candide. "We must cultivate our garden" just stuck with me. And today we're going to look at how I see this phrase in the lens of my childhood and even my life now, which most of the time is some kind of weird dating story, but then I'll add some poetry at the end. So welcome. My grandmother was a huge gardener. I mean, growing up on the farm, if we didn't raise it or milk it or gather it ourselves, we were eating something canned by Grandma. She would slave for hours, sweat dripping down her brow over pots in a kitchen that we would now consider a half-a-butt kitchen. Her house was 24 feet by 24 feet. She and her husband built it in the 20s, and when they built it, they bought two lots so that Grandma could have a garden next to it. And, you know, she just spent all her time during the summer in that garden. Now, she was also a school teacher, so, you know, it kind of worked out because in Nebraska, there are definite seasons, and the only time we're outside is basically June, July, and August. So she just spent a lot of time in that garden. She had peach trees and raspberry bushes and mulberry trees, and she even sold some flowers too, but anything you can imagine that would grow there. Now, Benkelman, Nebraska, does not have the best soil for gardening. One of the ways she got around this by putting nutrients in the ground was every time she would visit the farm, she would pile the trunk of her green Impala up with manure from the cattle lot. I mean, her car never smelled good, but at least she was putting nutrients into the ground. But anyway, she would come get a load and then take it back to Minkelman and spread it all over that garden. The thing, I guess the first real memory I have of Grandma in the garden was I was probably 2 or 3 years old, and I mentioned to her that I had never seen the sunrise. And she said, "Well, you're going to see it tomorrow." Now, the sun rose very early in June, just across into mountain time. Dundee County is one county that uses mountain time instead of central time. And so she got me up at like 4 a.m. and sat me on the stoop in the back. And I remember her sitting there for just a second, and I could see her feet with those bunions on them, roughed up from going barefoot, and her hands just lovingly touching my knee and saying, "You watch the sunrise. I'm going to get some gardening done." And I sat there on the stoop, waiting for the sun to rise, watching Grandma bending over, picking up weeds out of the garden and getting the watering ready to go so that she watered before, you know, the sun was out too much. And as that sun rose, I would look over at her and look at the sun and look over at her. And finally, the sun came up. It was beautiful and huge, and I could see it out here in the middle of nowhere. Gosh, we can see the sun rise. But, you know, her gardening was so much a part of our lives. When I was in college, my sophomore year, after my grandma had spent some time in the home and wasn't canning anymore, I opened up the last jar of what she called Sam's Jam. Sam's Jam was just strawberry rhubarb jam. When I opened that, I knew I was just opening the end. And that was just melancholy, beautiful, but melancholy. And I loved her more than I think I ever had at that moment. That was the last gift that I ever got from her. But Grandma definitely knew how to cultivate her real garden and cultivate the garden in me by, you know, having me share in her world and sharing her world with me. My dad, I would say, was also a garden cultivator in terms of taking care of the land and taking care of plants. He was a farmer. And the best part of farming for me was irrigation time. Every spring, well, late spring in May, the day we laid out pipe back when we still did gravity irrigation, favorite day. I knew I was going to get a tan that day, and it just signaled the beginning of summer. I started driving the tractor when I was pretty young because, you know, I just drove the tractor with the irrigation pipe behind us, and the boys and my dad would lift the pipe off and lay it down, and then we'd go back later and put it together. But that was my first driving experience. But just the irrigating, just the whole process of it was just wonderful. I would be lulled to sleep at night by the sound of those irrigation wells, remembering when the second we got all the pipe together, we'd go to the well and start it, and that water would come out, and gosh, sometimes dead stuff would spew out. But once we got it cleared out, the first drink of that clear water after a long, hard day's work, nothing more cool or refreshing than that irrigation water. And irrigating, you know, we finally moved to pivot irrigating. This is a little bit of a side note, but when my grandma finally did die, my mom inherited a little bit of money from her. She gave half of it to my dad to buy his first pivot, and she took the other half and got a massive facelift and got implants put in. But that was what my grandma's saving did for our family. Anyway, during the summers when we would check irrigation wells, we'd go from spot to spot. We'd go to George's place, and we'd go to the place east of Huntley. We'd go to the Star Place, the Creek Bottom, all names we had for places that we farmed. And as we would drive from spot to spot, because some of them were a mile or two apart, I mean, we had one spot that was like 35 miles away. That was outside, close to Orleans, Beaver City. And anyway, my dad and I would play Name That Tune. I don't know if you all remember that show, but instead of sing the tune or play the tune, we would whistle the tune. And I'd say, oh, Daddy, I can name it in three notes. I mean, can you? And he'd whistle, and I'd say, you're my sunshine. Another one of our favorites was Elvira. My heart's on fire for Elvira. Anyway, we'd check those wells, and of course, we didn't wear seatbelts in those days, so I could move back and forth across the seat and play with his hair and put his cap on and off, or his cowboy hat on and off, depending on what he had on for the day. So my dad also cultivated his garden by cultivating the relationship that we had together. You know, one thing he did was we would rogue beans, of course. He didn't ever rogue beans by hand. He'd spray beans, but he would tell me whatever I rogued, so the acres that I rogued, he would give me the difference between what he made on the rest of the crops and what he made on the section that I rogued. I can remember like one year, the acres that I rogued or pulled weeds out of made 5 to 10 bushels an acre more than the rest of the crop. So I made quite a bit of money that summer. But, you know, he just always encouraged me to share in what he was doing, and he rewarded me for that. My dad's garden was the center of the world, that Turkey Creek section of Harlan County mostly, and he cared for the earth, and he cared for me. As I slip into my adult life with that phrase, I think, you know, we must cultivate our garden is a great metaphor for dating and relationships, because, you know, it's important, no matter who we're hanging out with, that we don't over-cultivate, that we, you know, give that relationship some love and some attention. But, you know, it's like when a guy texts all day long, you're like, dude, you are over-watering this, please stop. And I find it funny that currently for genitalia, the little emojis are a peach and an eggplant, both things that grow in our gardens around here. But I've seen way too many peach and eggplant emojis for my life. But with gardens, you know, you just have to make sure you don't pull the vegetables out of the earth too soon. I mean, you don't give them a chance to grow. There's so many things that, you know, have to do with relationships and gardening. But I had some guy that was interested in me last summer, and this will tell you how you can kill a garden. He came to my house without me knowing and tilled my plot 3 times. I replanted that garden. So I planted the garden once right after he tilled it. Then he tilled it again because he didn't know that I had already planted it. So I planted it again. And then he tilled it again. And I just gave up. I mean, there were a few plants that were big enough that he knew were growing. So I got a little bit this summer, but I didn't get to can like my grandma always did, because I picked up canning nearly enough at the end of this summer because he had ruined my garden. I had one of the worst summers, but let me tell you, he and I are certainly not dating, but with any relationship, if you over-till it, overwork it, you're going to kill what you are, you know, what you have started. I'm going to share 2 poems with you today. The first one that I wrote, the second one from Blake, but the first is called From the Farmyard. You can find it in the book The Untidy Season from Backwaters Press. Just look on Amazon and you can find it. Why I had to search all over the house for this book, I do not know. But when I found it, my place is marked with a sweet picture of my children when they were 3 and 5 on a pony, Buddy, with my dad leading the horse. I love to use photos as bookmarks. Anyway, from the farmyard. I watch your outline in the combine cab as you harvest the star place, the quarter you sharecropped in the 50s. The sky turns olive drab. You rock the seat, urge the beast, faster. On evaporated puddles, my bare feet crunch clumps that look like pine cones. Mares whinny and buck, flip manes and tails, follow the sorrel stallion who rears and knocks down a fence post. The hail barbs fall. 3 days later, the graters smooth ruts in the road while we fix fence. Your forearms, sinewy, strong, work the post hole digger. When you strike rock, son of a bitch, you yell for the rock, the horses, the hail, the place measured for you. And now, William Blake's The Garden of Love. I went to the Garden of Love and saw what I never had seen. A chapel was built in the midst where I used to play on the green, and the gates of this chapel were shut, and thou shalt not writ over the door. So I turned to the Garden of Love that so many sweet flowers bore, and I saw it was filled with graves and tombstones where flowers should be. And priests in black gowns were walking their rounds and binding with briars my joys and desires. You know, Blake's poem is obviously about religious influences and religion, you know, putting confines on love, but it's about more than that. For me, it's just about continuing to cultivate the garden, not abandoning our gardens or our memories or the people who are important to us, and not letting too much outside influence in to judge or to change that garden that we are cultivating. As I leave you today from the middle of nowhere, I hope you'll think about how you can continue to cultivate your garden, cultivate your actual gardens and the people in your lives. And as always, I hope my middle of nowhere is somewhere close to yours. You might want to look for me, middle of nowhere 0102, on YouTube, on my website, and even on TikTok.